I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Escape the heat to True North Convenience Stores and get any size True Oasis Fountain Drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi Fountain Drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Passes does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high. It's deep. It's back. It's gone! Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 105. If you're listening, our drop date is July 31st. This is the official podcast of no longer having 22 hours of screen time a day, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Before we get going, hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening. Rate us 5 stars. We really appreciate that. And if you're watching on YouTube, remember, go to your favorite podcast platform and subscribe because it really helps us out. But as always, you can always find us on YouTube. On the WEI page, Play Tessie playlist. Hit the thumbs up on the videos. We really appreciate it. Also on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. Great stuff coming out there. Talked to Tyler O'Neill this past week during the week, and we got something with him up there, and we'll have more with him and Danny Jansen and others coming soon. So that was really good. But we're here to talk deadline. I'm here with Sammy and I'm here with Joe, who's in for Pat. But we're here to talk deadline. It's a differently timed series or a differently timed episode. We usually record and drop episodes the day after a series ends and then the day after that. This time we're dropping an episode on the finale of a series, on the day of the finale, with the Red Sox passing through the deadline. They did not sell, they did not buy sell, they flat out added, and now the debate is, was it enough? And in different areas, was it enough in some areas and not enough in others? I think there are a lot of people out there that think they checked off all the boxes. I think there are others out there that are underwhelmed in some areas, whether it be on the offense or on the starting pitcher side. Or if you had your heart set on a left-handed reliever, the Red Sox ended up getting two righties plus Johan Ramirez, though I do think that honestly, probably in the next few hours after you're listening to this, he probably will be DFA'd, maybe pass the waivers and stay in the organization that way. I like the guy, interesting arm, but it's not a guy that's going to be able to come to a team midseason and help you out, unfortunately. Maybe a guy that you could work with in spring training and reset him in the offseason, but we're not here to talk about Johan Ramirez. We're here to talk about the moves the Red Sox did make. And Sammy and Joe, before I kick it to you guys, I'm going to run through it. Here's what we got. Acquired James Paxton from Moises Bolivar, unranked. Acquired Danny Jansen for Edinson Paulino, the 15th ranked prospect. Cutter Coffey, the 28th ranked prospect. And Gilberto Batista, not ranked. And all of these rankings are via Sox prospects. They claimed Johan Ramirez from the Dodgers. They DFA'd Chase Anderson. They DFA'd Reese McGuire. They traded Nick York for Pirates starter Quinn Priester, former first-round pick there. They traded for Lucas Sims. And they traded away for Lucas Sims, Ovis Portes, an up-and-coming 19-year-old who broke on the scene this year. I believe I didn't write this one down, but I believe he's 29th on Sox prospects, though he had some helium. And then at the last second, they traded for Luis Garcia from the Angels and traded basically a heap of AAA guys, Rule 5 eligible dudes, Matthew Lugo, 13th on Sox prospects, though he was going to probably fall in the next rankings. Ryan Zephyrjian, who is 37th, throws 100 miles an hour, command issues, but he's getting better at it. Nico Cavadas, unranked, 60, I think he was 65 for like the premium subscribers for them, but big first baseman with a lot of flaws. And Jefferson Vargas ranked 54th. And then they DFA'd Trey Wingenter, who he pitched two games for the Sox, let up a gazillion runs in those two games. So I think how I want to do this is give you guys a chance. Maybe we start off with our grades of the deadline and just overall, and then we can kind of piece it little by little together. Sammy, you feel good about that?
Yeah, I think we can just give our grades and then we'll just go into, we'll start talking about one and that'll probably lead into the next.
Start us off. What do you got?
Okay, so I thought about this all day long. I was at like B plus, C minus, and I'm landing, my final grade is going to be C plus, which isn't bad. I think that the Red Sox, Craig Breslow specifically, they did address each need. We had three. We talked about it a million times on this show. A starting pitcher, check. They got James Paxton. Right-handed bat, check. They got Danny Jansen. And bullpen help. I would have preferred a lefty. Whatever. They got two capable bullpen arms. So check, check, check. The problem is not... it's the quality. It's the quality of the players they got. These are not bad players. None of them are bad players. They're not guys that I'm upset to have on the Red Sox.
What about Johan?
Oh God, don't even get me started. Johan's not even part of this conversation. Get that guy.
Yeah, he's not. We will not. Johan does not count as a deadline acquisition.
By the time you're listening, I pray to God that Johan Ramirez is not on the Red Sox anymore. That was the most embarrassing debut of all time. But anyway, it's the quality. So none of these guys are bad. They're just not exciting players to add to your roster. I think the best move was Quinn Priester for Nick York, and that's a futures move. So C plus is my grade again. Overall, decent job by Craig Breslow, who's under a ton of pressure. Brand new GM. It was a weird market this year. We're still getting used to this new market. I think it's pretty clear that with the new playoff format, it's going to almost always be a seller's market. We kept hearing this is an overpay, that's an overpay, overpay, overpay. At a certain point, they're not overpays. They're just the market. We spoke about that on the last episode too. So yeah, C plus, not terrible, not great.
Joe, let's get a grade. What do you got?
I am a little bit higher than Sammy. I initially went B plus, but I'm gonna after tonight's game, which is the second game of the Seattle series, when we're recording, I'm gonna bring it down to a B. I think. As Sammy said, they addressed the needs. They addressed every single need, or not every single need, but the needs that were at the top of the list, they absolutely hit. They got bullpen help. They added to the rotation, and they got a right-handed bat. The Danny Jansen one is a little confusing to me because it kind of came out of nowhere. I didn't expect the catcher position to really be addressed like that with Reese McGuire being DFA'd to make room for Jansen, but the way I sort of look at the deadline was compared a couple of things. One was how it compares to years past. As you said at the top, Gordo, they added. They didn't do any selling at all. They didn't do big selling. They didn't sell off any of their major league roster guys. They didn't sell off any of the big three. The only top 10 prospect that they gave out there was Nick York, but we all agreed that he was going to be the guy, the outside looking in guy when it comes to the trade bait. So you top that with all the other middle infielders among the top 50, like a Cutter Coffey, who, again, it's just a logjam that you had to make a decision on. So I give Craig Breslow, as Sammy alluded to, you give him a lot of credit in the market that he's in, the moves that he made, considering this is his first deadline and he has a lot of pressure to make the moves. It's a solid B. It's a solid B for me.
So God, I've thought about this so much and spent so much time looking at my phone and trying to take as much information in as possible. And it really is exhausting on deadline day. It really is. But to me, like, I feel like if I were giving a grade for you did the literal bare minimum, it would be a B minus. And I think he did just above the bare minimum because I don't think he necessarily needed to add two relief pitchers with good-ish news on Martin. Expected back around like August 7-ish. Oh, no, he's going to start a rehab on August 7, so maybe he'll be back like August 9, 10, 11 area. And Slayton hopefully not too far behind. I don't think he absolutely had to add two relievers, and he did. And I think it's good that he did because he recognized that he had a bunch of guys that were going to be Rule 5 eligible and how many of those guys were either going to be taken by other teams and maybe returned, but sometimes they don't return as good as they were when they left. And sometimes they don't return. And he was smart to trade the guys that he traded. I think he paid a hefty price for both Danny Jansen and Luis Garcia, but it was a hefty price in terms of guys that you were not going to want to add to the 40-man because A, you have a crunch as is, and B, hopefully they're going to be adding guys to the offseason, legitimate players via trade, via free agency, and your 40-man is going to be a crunch, and you're not going to have room to add guys like Edinson Paulino and Matthew Lugo, and maybe you'd have room to add Ryan Zephyrjohn, 100-mile-an-hour guy. Like, I honestly think he's going to be a legitimate reliever at some point for the Angels, and it's going to piss Sox fans off down the line when he puts up a couple of, you know, three ERA seasons and blows the Sox away with 100-mile-an-hour gas at some point. But overall, I don't think he overpaid with assets that he shouldn't have been using. The only real asset that he traded was Nick York, but that was in a move to sort of realign the organization. Basically, Quinn Priester is a pitching prospect, former first-round pick, multiple years on top 100 lists. Like, this is a guy that the Red Sox hope can be a mid-rotation starter, and he's obviously got options. They've got him in AAA, 6 years of control, assuming they keep him down there for 24 days, which I think is an obvious no-brainer. So I'm willing to say that at this point. Legitimate upside to be a mid-rotation guy, even today. I know the old report said that, but Keith Law, even today, says he still has that upside if he can get fixed. The parts where I was underwhelmed, I like the Danny Jansen addition. I always prefaced it by saying if they get another right-handed bat, I like it because it's going above and beyond. But now that he feels like he is the right-handed bat, that is the right-handed bat that they added. And to me, I would have liked someone at least that you could use as a platoon and be like, this guy's going to mash lefties. Either a long-term right-handed bat solution, like if you wanted to get a Brent Rooker, or if obviously Vlad Jr. wasn't for sale, but like if you wanted to get a Vlad Jr. and hope to extend him and get a long-term middle-of-the-order right-handed bat solution, I was thinking either that or get a guy that you could platoon with David Hamilton at second base, and he's just going to crush lefties, similar to how Rob Refsnyder and Willy Abreu platoon in the outfield. They didn't do that. They instead upgraded the backup catcher position. It is an improvement. I like Danny Jansen. I think his swing works well for Fenway. I actually think he's going to have a good last couple of months, and he's going to see the field a little bit more than Reese McGuire did. But I would have done a little bit more there. I thought they did plenty in the pen, and the starting pitcher conversation is where I think we should go next.
Yeah,
because I honestly think this is the most interesting conversation because the market for starting pitchers was crazy. Yusei Kikuchi got multiple three big league ready guys, legitimate prospects from the Astros for a rental and Kikuchi had an ERA higher than Paxton, has had an ERA in the sixes each of the last 2 months. Jack Flaherty, I don't know if we want to include him in this discussion because he's damaged goods. He's hurt, but like maybe not hurt, but like he keeps getting injections in his back, so he is hurt. And he got the Dodgers' third best prospect, but he's also significantly better. Like, he's not like you can't compare him to Paxton. But I was impressed that they were able to get a major league starting pitcher, one who they know, and get it for such a low cost. A guy who can start games for you. I'm not saying he's going to eat seven innings a start. I'm not saying he's going to be anything more than your five starter. But what I was hoping for at the deadline was that they were going to get a starter that could get them to the finish line. I think James Paxton can do it. And if he can't do it, they got depth in Quinn Priester. They have depth in Cooper Criswell. Like, they've got options, and it's not like before where if one guy goes down, you're on to Winkowski. That was the most important thing for me.
I hear you. I think out of all the trades that happened at the deadline, this is the one I'm most disappointed with. Initially, when it happened, I had the same thought process as you, Gordo. Great, they got starting pitching depth. This is a guy that can help you get to the finish line, maybe. But in my head, I was thinking, there's no way that 35-year-old James Paxton, who is just DFA'd by the Dodgers, this is not going to be the starting pitcher ad. This is probably the safety net ad. And then the Quinn Priester trade and everything, and I'm kind of towards deadline day being like, okay, maybe they're not going to add another starting pitcher. So once that was final and it was official that James Paxton was the only starting pitcher being added, I don't like it as much. This is a guy who has massive, massive injury concerns. He has his entire career struggled with injuries, and he's already pitched a lot of innings this season. And then you go and you look into the, you dig into his pitch information. The fastball has gone down roughly a mile per hour already from the beginning of the year to now. Like I said, he's 35 years old, so I doubt he's going to get better as the season goes on. I don't want to rag on the guy. He's an okay starting pitcher. He's got a 4.5 ERA right now, which is about, which means he's averaging roughly a quality start, which if you have a solid offense like the Red Sox, you'll take that. It's just, I don't know if he can keep up that pace. And bigger picture, this is not a guy you want to rely on to give you meaningful innings. Just he hasn't been able to do that and stay healthy for years. And we saw it last year. He fell off a cliff with the Red Sox back in 2023. He just stopped being effective, and it happened pretty rapidly. And then today he makes his debut, and we're going to do a full Mariners Red Sox series recap next episode. But we'll touch on the Paxton performance from today and Tuesday as we record. Two things. Bizarre pitch mix. He was basically a two-pitch pitcher tonight. He threw, I think it was 28 fastballs. Let me pull it up. 28 four-seam fastballs, 28 knuckle curves. So those were his two main pitches, 50-50 on him. 14 sinkers, so he threw a few of those, two changeups. Very odd. Like, you got four pitches. Why are you? I don't know. I'm not a pitching coach. Second thing, the fastball location. So many fastballs right down the middle, and there's no way he's trying to do that. So it's just fatigue concerns, pitch mix concerns. How much time does Andrew Bailey have to work with this guy? He's a veteran. He's not a young guy that's going to be molded. I just have so many concerns, and that's on top of the injury stuff. So Quinn Priester's kind of my saving grace. Like if James Paxton gets hurt, you now have this kid to go to. You also have Cooper Criswell in the bullpen, who I might think is better than James Paxton. Maybe he should be the fifth starter instead of Paxton. It's a whole different conversation. So to put a bow on this Paxton rant, I don't hate the move. I just hate that there wasn't a better move before or after it to get a better, more reliable starting pitcher in the rotation. That said, I'm glad we've added something in that regard.
The issue here, though, Sammy, is I like, obviously, in a perfect world, do they get a guy that's better than Paxton? Yes. The warts that you laid out there, none of them are wrong. Like the fastball, especially, it's not something that was just today, where basically when he got it at the top of the zone, he was getting a bunch of swing and misses, and it was great. He got five strikeouts basically off of that. But when he left it in the middle, that's when Jorge Polanco takes him deep over the monster. Like,
yeah,
that's just the way it's been for him all season. And I don't know why his command is worse this year. The walks are way up. I don't know why that is. But either way, it's just, if it's not Paxton, then what? Because this is not like a team that is two games up on a playoff spot, and it's, if you fortify this with like a really good five starter, there's no way they're gonna miss. Like, and then the team also has warts that even if they had traded for Tarek Skubal, if Tanner Houck and Cutter Crawford fall off a cliff down the line, then it's like you're missing the playoffs anyway. So it's like right now their playoff odds are basically hovering around 40%. And based off of the prices that the other starting pitchers were getting traded for, I know Paxton's far from perfect, and maybe he won't be the five starter down the line. I like to think that he will be. I like to think that he's better than Cooper Criswell, but like I'm willing to what I would do is piggyback them off each other. Maybe that's another discussion for another day.
Kind of sort of did that today.
By mistake. But
I hear what you're saying. My issue is, like, you didn't have to pay for a top dollar starting pitcher. There were guys who were, you know, rely, like Eric Fetty. His price wasn't crazy, and he's under control for next
year, too. That's a tough one, though, because he was in the three-team trade, and there were other guys like like they traded Tommy Edman basically to get him. So I don't even know what the equivalent.
Yeah, Tommy, but it's that's like a banged up Tommy Edman. I mean, there's him. I would have taken Paul Blackburn from Oakland. He's having an okay season. He's not a
4.5 ERA guy, and he's hurt.
I know,
or he's not hurt now, but he's Paxton with more control, and they gave him more to do
innings, though. And I mean, that's another thing with Paxton. He's already thrown a lot of innings this year too, and like, I mean, you needed a starting pitcher, and you got a guy who got DFA'd. That's just kind of like
no, don't go there.
It's what happened. It's just an ugly look for me. And by the way,
you can't say that though, because they DFA'd him because they had multiple guys coming back from injury. They needed roster spots. They didn't want to like lose a real guy. They knew that with their starting pitchers coming back,
that's not good.
But what I'm saying is, with their starting pitchers coming back, they knew that James Paxton.
Talking about the Dodgers, to be clear.
Dodgers. Yeah. They had like Kershaw coming back, and they knew that Paxton wasn't going to be in the rotation at that point. The DFA process takes a week. So as long as you're able to trade them within a week and they knew there was going to be plenty of interest in a starting pitcher, the DFA like would obviously lead to a trade, and doing it this way allowed for a roster spot to be open right away. So yeah. It's not like he was like DFA'd like and Joe and I talked about this when we did the reaction, but it's not like in Kansas City, they DFA'd Jordan Lyles. The Red Sox DFA'd Trey Wingenter. This isn't that. Like that's not what that
was. It's not like he was DFA because he's bad, but he's fungible depth for the Dodgers, and they're fine just kicking him to the curb. But this is the guy we're relying on to save your rotation. I just would have liked a little bit more. I would have spent a little bit more if I were Craig Breslow.
Would you have traded Miguel Blaise for a starter with for either a mediocre starter with a year and a half or a good starter on as a rental?
I need a name. It depends. It depends on like what the contract is.
Would you have traded? Oh God! I mean, would you have traded Miguel Blaise for Jack Flaherty?
No, not for not with a back issue. Yeah, if he didn't have the back issue, then sure, that's the best. He's. I mean, that's a sub-3 ERA.
Well, let's pretend he didn't, because for the sake of discussion, I actually think it's an interesting discussion. You would have traded Miguel Blaise for a half season of healthy Jack Flaherty, when the Red Sox have 40% playoff odds, and you don't know if Hauk and Cutter are going to be able to make it to the finish line as effective pitchers. Like that's where I have the roadblock. I can't trade 6 years of a prospect that I believe in that much for a half year of nearly anybody in the state where the Red Sox are. If they a year in the future, like Roman Anthony's up and your outfield is packed, and like this team's a first place team, that's different. But it's just they're not there yet, though.
What's the difference? If you know that he's your future and Blaise is like one of the younger guys who's probably going to end up being blocked, like we've seen a lot of guys get blocked, and you have a chance to take this really fun story, this team that people are falling in love with, they might have a chance to make the playoffs. They just need starting pitching. Boom, you get a guy with a 2.95 ERA. He's got 133 strikeouts and like 108 innings. He's pitching his ass off. You can even extend him if you want, different conversation. But I just think it would be such a good addition to the team. And like, obviously this is in an imaginary world where he doesn't have a back issue that freaks us all right out. To be clear, I'm not doing this trade in real life because of that. But if he didn't have it, like that's the kind of luxury you have when you have a deep system like the Red Sox have. Even without Blaise, they'd still have a great system. So
you want to know the difference to me though? The difference to me though is like a team like the Dodgers, they're making the playoffs regardless. This is just kind of like a push us over the top move. With the Red Sox, acquiring even a healthy Jack Flaherty guarantees you nothing.
And but what about the Mariners, who we saw today? They're probably similar playoff odds to the Red Sox. They went out and got Randy Arozarena, Justin Turner, Yimi Garcia, JT Chagua. I hope I pronounced that.
I love their deadline. They had an amazing deadline.
That's what I'm talking about, though. That's it. Now they're probably that fan base is probably fired
for whatever
up.
Reason. For whatever reason, bats just didn't go for the same price as pitchers, either starters or relievers. And that's a whole different discussion that the Red Sox didn't trade basically nothing for Justin Turner, or Josh Bell went for literally just money, and the Marlins ate money just to give him away. Like a right-handed bat, they did nothing over those things. That's a different discussion. It's hard to say just because the Mariners have their starting pitching is all, it's all set.
I feel like we're making so many excuses though for like why Craig, but like, it's like the market was tough. The market's always tough. I feel like we say this every single year with this new playoff format. It's always going to be a seller's market. You got to pay up. isn't it?
I wouldn't say it's an excuse. Because it's not. I'm not even saying like he should have done that. I'm saying, in terms of the starting pitching market, he did what I said before the deadline was they need to get an arm that can start games for you and get you to the finish line and give you enough depth so that if someone gets hurt, you don't go to Wink. They got two starting pitchers. So now there are multiple layers before you have to go to the emergency and break glass and go to Wink.
Well, yeah, it's definitely good in that regard. I'm not debating that. It's certainly an improvement. It's just like, that's it. James Paxton in the year 2024, he's 35 years old. Velocity is going down.
You also got to look at the situation that Breslow was in. Like, he's trying to add for this team, but he's also trying to salvage the future in a certain way. Like, the Priester move, as you guys said, I think we talked about it among each other in our chat, was it's a great move, but it's not for 2024. So the idea of being able to sustain that depth while also putting out a competitive playoff potential team. Yes, it's a hurdle for Breslow. And honestly, considering the prices that were out there, it was a tough deal for him to make. So
Joe, you bring up a good point here. Look, what was the one major asset the Red Sox parted with? It was Nick York. And what did they trade him for? They traded him for the starting pitcher asset that they have a ton of control over. It's clear their priority, they're not taking, like, I know that people hated this term, but the North Star thing, they're not taking their eye off that. And
I forgot about the North Star. Oh, yeah, my God.
The fucking high blue North Star.
My issue with that is, like, that feels like the same thing as, like, we don't want to mortgage the future. Like, you're not going to trade your friggin', like, fifth or sixth best guy when you have a deep system. It's just so... We've been doing the same song and dance for years, and it's never turned out good. We already have...
Who are you trading Campbell for? If you're fifth or sixth, like Campbell, Montgomery, who are you trading those guys for? That went at the deadline.
I would do... I don't hate Fetty for Campbell.
Oh, no.
You have to keep in mind... Well, you'd have him next year, too, for absolutely nothing. So you could add another big name.
Yeah.
And you have to keep in mind, like, Christian Campbell was... nothing a year ago. He was like, what, got him in the third round, I think?
Fourth
round. He's had helium for 2 months, and now all of a sudden we're not going to trade him for a legitimate major league starting pitcher with team control on a cheap price? Like, that's crazy to me.
You can say the same thing about Eric Fetty. Eric Fetty 2 months ago was nothing.
No, Eric Fetty was, like, killing it overseas, and he had a major league career prior. Like,
yeah, and he stunk in the major league career. I'm just saying, like, if I'm trading a guy like Christian Campbell... If I'm trading a top 100 guy, I want to package that with other stuff to get a legitimate stud. Like, I don't want there to be a question.
Yeah, that Christian Campbell does not warrant a Garrett Crochet or a Tarik Skubal.
No, you'd have to package him. Yeah, right, you could do that. But that's when you start mortgaging the future.
But that happened, and you do that in, like, okay. Let's back up a little bit, because I asked you before about Miguel Blaise for Jack Flaherty. The other guys that you could group in with Miguel Blaise are like Yoelian Cespedes and Arias. And who's another? Am I forgetting someone that's like a young kid at the bottom of the top 10?
Sandlin.
Like, yeah, Sandlin.
There's Zanatello.
Nazan's a good one. Okay, group those guys.
Castro. Are you thinking of Castro?
No.
Alan Castro, he's having a good season.
Maybe I'm thinking there's one more and there's not. Or maybe I'm thinking of Montgomery. I don't know. Whatever. These guys that you think are going to be the next big prospects, like, you can trade them now and get a rental for them, or you could wait until the big three come up, and then those guys hopefully have taken the step forward into double A and are the next group of top 100 prospects. That's when you trade them. Once your base is in place, right now the base isn't in place. You're David Hamilton sitting like 100 over his last 30 at bats. You're platooning at first base and in right field, and your DH, your lineup is so left-handed, you can't hit left-handed pitching right now. There are a lot of flaws in this team.
I mean, same with the Diamondbacks last year. The Diamondbacks weren't that great. They add in. They look at that.
What did they add last year? What did they do at the deadline last year?
Gurriel.
No, that was before the season.
Diamondbacks.
They must have. No, because I remember the
Oh, they brought Tommy Pham. They brought Seawald.
They got an ace closer who actually didn't do too well in the World Series, but he did it well in their other playoffs and in the regular season.
They did get an ace closer. Seawald is certainly a step above Lucas Sims. I'll give you that. But Lucas Sims is good.
I know. I'm not comparing those guys. I'm just saying, like, sometimes when you go for it, it just changes the whole vibe of the clubhouse and the feel of the team. And this is like not, they didn't do that. They plug some holes in the, this is like, I don't know. I just don't like the, like, we're talking about these prospects. Like, this prospect might be the next big prospect. It's not even like this guy might be the next big thing. This guy might be the next guy to be in line to be the next big thing. Like, it's so, like, how many of these guys are we going to hang on to? You already got the premier guys. You just added another one with Montgomery. You got the best draft luck in the history of the world, the Red Sox. It's unbelievable. So I'm just at the point where I'm done hanging on to these guys.
Done with the rebuild. I get it. You're done with the rebuild. And you know what? I take so much solace in knowing that it might be over now if the Red Sox make the playoffs. If they don't make the playoffs, I have a really good feeling that it's going to be over next year. But the flaws that this team has are pluggable pluggable is the wrong word. Like, by the flaws I'm talking about like how they can't hit left-handed pitching, and that's something you can fix in the offseason if you reshuffle things. Like, trade that got absolutely roasted today with Willier and Campbell for Rooker.
That was unfair. You got unfairly roasted. I don't like the trade, but that's the price. If anyone's been paying attention to the market, the thing, what was it, Campbell and Abreu? That's the friggin' price. Brent Rooker's hit his 26th home run tonight. Right, anyway.
He has a mid-900s OPS, but regardless. But, like, this is what we're talking about. Like, your outfield of Sedan, Jaron, Willier, and then you got Roman coming. Like, one of those guys has got to go. It's not going to be the one right-handed bat in Sedan. Probably not going to be the guy who's leading your team right now in Jaron. And yes. You would think it's probably not going to be your star prospect in Roman Anthony, who John Heyman said today is untouchable. So that, like, Willier Abreu is kind of maybe the odd man out.
But this is why I'm not concerned about hanging on to prospects. We're already talking about a jam coming up next year at the major league level. Some of these guys, and you'll still have more to cash in the following year. You have such a good system now.
But the reshuffling has got to be for something controllable. Like, you're not trading Willier for, like, a rental right-handed bat or a rental starting pitcher.
No, not Willier. I'm talking about the lower minors guys. I don't want to trade. I'm not taking away anything from the major league team this year. There's nothing. I felt like there was nothing you could move that would get you something in your farm system that you don't already have. Like, I don't think Tyler O'Neill or Pivetta is bringing back, like, a legit starting pitching prospect, like, better than Quinn Priester. So, but that's a different story. I think we're all on the same page. We're glad they didn't punt the season away for, like, the third year in a row. So, I just kind of wish they dipped a little deeper into the farm. And it doesn't have to be those elite guys. Like, Mydroth is a really good prospect that you could get something out of.
I don't know. I don't know where their head was at there, but Alex Speer on Nesson today made it seem like they were dangling him. And my guess would be that it was maybe for Renjifo, who didn't.
Yeah, Mydroth, Arias, Elmer Rodriguez. I'm not saying I want these guys to be traded.
Those guys,
you could take from this list and get some major league talent. And it's not like I'm upset with the deadline.
Let's loop this together. I absolutely agree. That is the crop of prospects that they should have been trying to trade from. I don't think they get a starting pitcher that's considerably better than James Paxton, maybe even at all.
Get someone who's more reliable than Paxton if you package, like, York and Mydroth. Is it Mydroth or Mydroth?
Mydroth.
I think if you package York and Mydroth,
I agree. If you did that, But back to Joe's point, what did they do with Nick York? Like, my who says no was Nick York for Luis Renjifo. That probably would have gotten, I guess I can't say it. It's the Angels, but, like, maybe that gets it done. Nick York can get you a good player with a year of control or a year and a half of control. But they chose to go for the upside with 6 years, which shows you where they still think this org is at.
For sure. No, I get what they're thinking. And I love, that was my favorite move in the entire deadline. But then do Mydroth and Lugo or friggin' Castro or someone. You still have more options. There's so many guys in that mid-tier with the Red Sox that they could have gotten someone slightly more reliable than Paxton. Maybe even if the numbers aren't as good. Just a guy that I don't feel like he's just got red flags out the ass. He's old. He has issues. His velocity is already going down. He did not look good in his first start with the Red Sox. Defense didn't help him. He still didn't look good. I just that's the one thing that's irking me. Everything else I thought was good, but we can
bat.
We can
what
move on
the
to
bat?
The other moves.
What about the bat?
The bat. Okay, so I didn't love it, but after sitting on it a little bit, this kind of helps your pitching staff too. If you got a better catcher behind the plate, like Jansen is really good with blocking and framing and stuff that people who are listening probably don't care about, but that's important. And his swing, I think it's really an overused term when people say this right-handed bat is a perfect swing for Fenway, but I really do think that applies with Danny Jansen. He's right-handed. He pulls the ball all the time and he pulls it in the air a lot. So I like it more now than I did initially. Weirdest swing I've ever seen, by the way. Bizarre looking. It works.
Kind of like a karate chop.
Yeah, a little bit of a karate chop, Jansen. He's also got rec specs, which is cool. Mm-hmm. I was speaking with Robbie Hyde about whether or not he's a ginger, kind of in between. So we'll leave that to him. But Danny Jansen, yeah, it's fine. It's another one that I'm kind of like, this isn't quite the level I wanted, but I don't think that a right-handed bat was nearly as important as starting pitcher. So you get the added defense as well. I'm fine with it.
The thing with the right-handed bat that I'm just I'm going to say it and feel free to roll your eyes, but it is true, is that with, I can't even say it with a straight face, but I'm
going to. I don't even know where you're going. What are you going to say?
They're getting Tristan Casas back and it's going to help that they get their middle of the order bat for basically the first time all year. And I'm just going to tell you, it's as if when you get a guy basically for the first time all season injected into your lineup, that is the same basic idea as a trade deadline acquisition. I know people fucking hate hearing that, but it's not Chris Martin and Justin Slayton coming back doesn't count as a trade deadline acquisition because you had those guys for most of the year. You know what you are with those guys. We don't know what this team is really with Tristan Casas. He's not a right-handed hitter, but I do feel confident with him hitting left-handed pitching. And I don't know how confident they feel in Vaughn Grissom, but he's on rehab, so they'll try him out too. But I'm sure those things mixed in with Yoshida performing well kind of gave them a little bit more ease in terms of the right-handed bat. Maybe that was why they didn't push in the extra chips for that. Maybe they allotted it for the bullpen instead of that because they were feeling good about it. I don't know. I'd be curious to know. They'll never tell us, but...
The curious case, at least for me with Danny Jansen, is I like the player too. I'm with you guys. I like the swing. I think he'll do well as a catcher. The issue for me would be in late games. Like Alex Cora was pretty confident in saying that Connor Wong is going to be taking more ground balls. You'll see him more at second base. You'll see him at first base. And he does provide that versatility, but I still have concerns when it comes to you need a defensive stop and Connor Wong is going to be the guy at second base to make those plays. That is where I sort of am a little bit cautious to absolutely say that this is a great move to make. Getting Danny Jansen is good. Getting that player is good, but the situation it provides has me a little bit nervous.
It's weird. It's a weird one. Yeah, your catcher is going out to play second to keep his bat in the lineup more often. But this is the kind of stuff that Alex Cora loves, so I trust him. And
he does one with this team managing weird crap.
Yeah, it's classic Cora. Joe, I agree. It's like it's a strange move. It's a good move. It's a strange move. And then Gordo, your Casas take about him kind of being the big deadline bat.
Don't quote me on that. People get mad.
No, you're right. It's not like Trevor Story last year where the guy just had major, major surgery and he's rushing through his rehab. You have no clue what he's going to look like. You've never seen him perform on your team before. Casas had like a weird cartilage tear. It's not like he had any structural serious issues. Figure he's just going to need some reps and he'll be fine. And that's maybe your second best bat on the team, second or third best bat on the team. So I think that's totally fair. The issue is, though, he doesn't excel against lefties. Like, he can handle them, but the Red Sox issues against of hitting left-handed pitchers are still kind of there. You have O'Neill, Ref Snyder, Jansen from the right side who can hit
Wong.
Lefties. Wong, too, yep. And then Rafi does fine against them as well. So I don't think that
like
was nearly...
the thing, though. It's like no one really excels, like, except for O'Neill. Yeah. Like, that's the only guy where it's like, that guy's going to freaking mash him. Like, that's
it. But you have enough speed and talent to manufacture runs. The bigger issues, for sure, was the rotation, number one, and then not like big picture the bullpen, but at the time of the deadline right now, this team badly needed relief help so bad that they let Johan Ramirez wear the uniform, and not just wear the uniform, go out onto the pitching mound and throw pitches in a major league game. And how poetic was it that he drilled his first batter?
Dude, yeah, I'm trying to think of who he kind of reminded me of. Oh God, Dinelson Lamet a little bit.
Oh God.
He's like Dinelson Lamet. Actually, wow, the whole experience is very similar, because I was very excited that they got Dinelson Lamet, because like he's another guy where it's just like, he had good stuff and he had success in the past. Although Johan, I don't think has had success in the past, but like it's like a guy that comes in and like kind of excites me, and then you watch him pitch and it's like, oh God, this guy could not possibly need more work. But they did. Yeah. They did improve the pen. The guys were not here to help for the game two of the Mariners series, nor even if they were here, nor would they have been able to help by the time this game got away. But Lucas Sims is a legitimate dude. He has been basically a good reliever for his whole career. He is pitching well now. They've added a cutter. He's got one of the best sliders in the game, and his cutter has made him even more of a force. Like we talk about not getting a left-handed reliever. Lucas Sims this year is better against left-handed hitters than righties. They've got lefties. They've got multiple lefties in the bullpen in Bernie and Boozer, where I feel like if they've got like a pocket of lefties coming up, I'm good to throw those guys at the lefties. And if you need if you have a situation where maybe a tough lefty is coming up, but he's surrounded by righties or something, and you want to throw the righty out there, Lucas Sims is your guy. Can be a high leverage dude. The walks are a problem. They're going to have to figure that out, but like it hasn't really hurt him this year. Like his numbers are good despite it. And then Luis Garcia, just a solid veteran dude. I believe he's allowed just 2 runs in his last 15 and two thirds innings dating back to June 15th. So
nice. Didn't know that. It's a good little tidbit.
Good little tidbit there.
He got the Papelbon seal of approval too. Good. Papelbon liked the trade. He said, I think they were teammates in Philly.
Cause he's 37.
Yeah. He's older. I like that. I said on the show, I think this was Baseballs and Boring on EEI. I said, I'd prefer a veteran just because it's such a young team. I want a salty vet out there, along with Kenley and soon Liam Hendricks, hopefully. But, Lucas Sims, Gordo, you left out the number one most important thing. He's fucking crazy.
Yes.
He's a crazy guy. He screams on the mound a lot. The coolest thing ever, I think you actually put it on Twitter, is when the Reds were playing a game in Cincinnati and it was pouring rain, like a ridiculous amount of rain. And the umps, for whatever reason, weren't calling the game. And Sims was clearly upset with it. It was way too much. Like, you can't play baseball in that weather. And he kept getting a new baseball from the ump and throwing it to the side, new baseball, threw it to the side. And I don't know how that ended. I assume they ended up suspending the game because it looked like they were trying to play through a monsoon.
I think they called it. I think after I think that made them call it. We should go back and figure that out.
It was ridiculous.
I had him in fantasy at that point in time. So I had a hoot out of that, because like I was like, suspend the damn game. He's going to walk the house.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we could ask him when he gets to Fenway.
Oh,
we'll find him and be like, yo, are you actually crazy? Because we should do... Oh, yeah, there it is. Throwing the ball out. Good. Yeah, look at it. I mean, it's pouring rain. I wouldn't want to pitch in that either. The hitter probably can't even see the ball. But anyway, Lucas Sims...
What the bullpen's going to look like, though. Like, when... Let's say before Hendricks comes back, because I don't know when that's happening. Core said he will pitch this year, but... Whenever the wording is he will pitch this year, it's like, oh shit. So let's delay that. You'll have Jansen, Martin, Slayton, Sims, Garcia, Zach Kelly, Bernardino, Cam Boozer. That's 8 legitimate relievers that I trust right there.
I love the pen now. I love the
if healthy.
And I think also too that going back to my original point is that the bullpen now has a little bit of depth. You know, when you go down to when you see Slayton and Martin go down, everyone had to create and get into a new role. And you had these AAA guys who probably weren't ready to come into the pen, make it work, maybe outside of like Bailey Horn. But essentially, when you have all these guys in, plus Hendricks, I know he's ignored right now, but then you have guys who are basically ready. You have Winkowski, who's ready in AAA that you can call up, and you feel you have a little bit of confidence in him. You have Bailey Horn that you can call up. You have a little bit of confidence in him, too. You now have a pipeline in the bullpen that you did not have when you started the year, and quite honestly, even a week or two ago. So I think addressing the bullpen, I give all the flowers to Craig Breslow on the deals he made.
And what I will say from here forward, yeah, Criswell too. He pitched well tonight. The issue with Criswell though is that he kind of has to be in the Anderson role because you have to have a guy in the. So even if he pitches well, like unless they want to like put Winkowski in the Anderson role, then like he's kind of stuck there because you have to have someone that's going to eat games. Otherwise, you're using like five relievers to eat a 10-run loss. But yeah, I mean the bullpen is when it's healthy, it's going to be a strength, and hopefully until it gets healthy, it's not the massive weakness that it was. I hope. I don't know. Like, we still need to figure out, like, Zach Kelly he's definitely going to have to kind of get a reset here. Hopefully getting a couple new arms in there will give him some time off to do that. Bernardino is coming off. I believe his last outing was very good, but another one who was great and then kind of had a little bit of a hiccup and hopefully in the right matchups can be good. But I think one more thing. Sorry, just to go completely off topic. How about the Roman Anthony scare today from John Morosi?
Oh, my God. See, but that's what I'm talking about. Doesn't get your heartbeat going when you feel like a big trade is going to happen? So we should tell people what happened. Okay. So Morosi, right?
Yeah, go for it. Morosi.
Hey, John Morosi, this is what, like not an hour before the fucking trade deadline? He tweets, Roman Anthony has been scratched from the Portland lineup tonight. It's the number one prospect in the system, or number two, depending on who you're talking to. So, of course, everyone's automatic reaction, there it is that, holy crap, a blockbuster trade has been made. Buckle up. This is the kind of, oh my God, Chris Sale to the Red Sox for their top two prospects. That kind of trade. And then like 4 minutes later, he tweets, oh, it's not trade related. So I don't know if he made a mistake.
The Red Sox could not have shut it down faster because the entire beat was and Brian Abraham put his name on it, too. It's like Red Sox director of player personnel or Red Sox farm director. Brian Abraham says not trade related. It was like within 4 minutes, the entire the Red Sox could not have shut it down faster. Like, hey, and by the way, he wasn't scratched. Like he lied or he was wrong. He was just never in the lineup. There's a huge difference between being in the lineup and getting scratched on deadline day versus
scratched means you were initially supposed to be in the lineup.
Yeah.
He wasn't in. What do you guys think? Was that on purpose or was that an honest mistake? I don't know Morosi personally. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I'll say that had to have been a mistake. He's a legit journalist. I don't think he wants to soil his name like that, but that was bad.
Yeah, I'll go that way too. Like he was probably just using the terminology that he did for anyone else, like Jack Flaherty scratched from his start, similar to something like that. So I'm with you. I'll give him the benefit.
You know what I bet happened? I bet like an executive or something texted him like, oh, Roman Anthony scratched, or like because they just glanced at it and Morosi just ran with it and tweeted it. Like,
see, that's the issue with Twitter now.
I agree. Yeah,
it's not about being right. It's all about being first. Everyone knows this. Yeah. Well, so I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, but that's a bad mistake.
It scared the living shit. I mean, Red Sox Nation for about 4 minutes was losing their shit. Big difference between getting scratched and not being in the lineup. God,
can you imagine this conversation right now if Roman Anthony had been traded and the Red Sox had like Garrett Crochet right now and we had a legit 25-year-old ace but we weren't sure about the health and oh man, that would have been nerve-wracking and fun, but I'm glad that didn't happen. Don't trade the top guys.
Okay. I'm before we wrap this up, because we've gone a pretty good amount into each of these moves. I want you to rank the trades in terms of your favorite to least favorite. And we've got five of them here. Paxton, Danny Jansen, Quinn Priester, Lucas Sims, Luis Garcia.
Okay. I'll start us off. Quinn Priester, by far the best. My reasoning is, I'll be quick. Nick York was a solid prospect, kind of fringe top 100 guy. Quinn Priester is a year removed for being like 70 something. So that's a starting pitcher in the top 100. Red Sox haven't had that since Michael Kopech, maybe. When was the last time the Red Sox had a top 100 prospect that was a starting pitcher?
Bam.
I don't know. Was Bayo top? I don't think. Yeah. Was Bayo ever top 100?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he was like top 50, top 60-ish.
Okay, I'll have to check on that. I don't know if he was. Okay, Bayo, whatever. Quinn Priester, great. It's basically like a pitching version of Nick York, slightly better. So I really like that one. And then Gord already mentioned if they keep him in the minors for, what is it, 24 days, 28 days, 20-something days, they get that 6 year of control. So obviously going to do that. You're not going to bring this kid up and forfeit an entire year. So that's my favorite trade so far. Second favorite, I would say I will go with Sims. I think you need a psychopath out there in the bullpen. And our guy Liam is still hurt. He's got a little psycho in him, but if he's not ready to go, we got another psycho. So that's good. And then I'll say Garcia after that. He's salty veteran, throws gas. That's cool. Got the Papelbon seal of approval. I'll go Jansen. And then the last, my least favorite, is Paxton. I think he's very useful. Might be more useful than some of those guys, but context-wise, nah. So, yeah, that's my order.
Joe, where are you going?
Okay.
Let's hear it.
Okay. I think bullpen was obviously the biggest issue to address, and I think Sims fits the mold perfectly of the deal Craig Breslow will want to make. So I'll go Sims. I will then go Priester because I think that's a lot of hype for the future and beyond. I'll go Danny Jansen, just as a sidebar, me and Gordo got to meet him on Monday, first game of the Seattle series. Seems like a cool dude. And from what he did in the Sunday game against the Yankees, I thought he did really well. So Jansen third. I'll go Paxton fourth just because you had to address the starting pitching. So I like that move there. And then I will go Garcia for a veteran bullpen. I like the moves overall. I'm not saying all these moves are bad, but in terms of, as you said, Goro, excitement on what the needs to fill and what they need to address. Those are my guys.
I mean, something's got to come in last, right? Like I'll preface it. I didn't dislike any move they made. My favorite, Sammy, I'm right there with you. It's like not even close. My favorite move is the Quinn Priester, Nick York thing. And one thing that I really don't want to fall by the wayside with Sox fans here, because we've seen so many years of like the Heim Bloom, and it's kind of like indecisiveness and fear, a little bit of fear. And there is nothing riskier than a prospect for prospect trade.
Oh,
because
yeah.
If your guy, particularly guys like this, where it's like they were both top, they were both first round picks, then they were both like top 60, 70-ish prospects, and then they both kind of fell out of that favor. With Priester was like lack of big league success. With York, it was injuries and lack of minor league success. But there's a ton of risk here. Like if they can't fix Quinn Priester, like Nick York has a legitimate floor as a big leaguer. So if they don't fix Quinn Priester, like they're gonna look like idiots. And
yeah,
he's York willing to take that risk.
Yeah,
York has the floor. So like, I don't think York has anywhere close to the ceiling that Priester has. Like York, we'll see if he can be an everyday player. Priester, I think has a legitimate chance to be a mid rotation starter. But obviously, if the deal flops, you're going to look bad. But it's a risk they're willing to take because they know how important it is to balance the organization. Breslow talked about it over and over again. Like this is the type of deal they've been looking to make since he was hired 9 months ago. Figure out how to rebalance the organization and catch, maybe not catch the pitching all the way up to the hitting, because that's borderline impossible. The offense in their farm system is unmatched. But to get young pitching depth at minimum, young pitching depth that maybe could be a mid-rotation guy, and we'll see from there. Like, I don't know what, then this is a lunatic kind of comparison I'm going to throw out there. But another first rounder that fell out of favor that got traded last year at the deadline was Cole Reagans, and we saw what happened to him. So I'm just saying, like there's a lot of places you could go with Quinn Priester, and the Red Sox took a risk doing it, and I'm glad they were willing to do it because York was blocked. There was no way he was going to have a future in the organization, and you might as well trade him now when he's playing well, because this is kind of the first time he's played well in like 2 or 3 years. I can't speak highly enough about the move. Like when it hit, I was like, oh god, like, I don't know, like let's look into this, because I really didn't know much about Quinn Priester. But the more you read into it, the better it gets. But so yeah, that's far and away my favorite. You go, Sammy.
Okay. So I'm looking at the top 100 list history. So Bayo kind of came up too quick to be on the MLB pipeline top 100. He was on other ones. Do you guys want to take a wild guess who the last pitcher is? I'll tell you the year if you want.
Well, technically, isn't it Perales on Baseball America this year, even though it was like for like one update?
I'm going off of pipeline, though. The basic one that most people use. Baseball America is annoying because not everyone has it. You have to have like the subscription and all that shit.
The pipeline ones you're looking at only show the preseason rankings. It won't even show you the midseason.
You want to guess who it is? The last guy we started like had a guy in the top 100.
I mean, it would have to be Kopech.
No. There's a guy you're forgetting who completely flopped. Complete flop.
Was it? I this might be going way back, but Kaysen Gabbard.
No, you go too far back. It's more recent than you think.
It's not Renato and it's not Owens. Those guys were before Kopech.
I was gonna say Henry Owens.
There was a story about him this year. It was not good. It was about him doing something illegal. Not that harmful, but illegal.
My next guess was gonna be Anderson Espinoza, but it's not him.
It's Jay Groom.
Okay. Groom.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, he so they entered 2018. So yeah, you're probably right. Bayo probably made a quick appearance like mid-season, but like start of the year going into the last time the Red Sox had that was Jay Groom, 2018, 85th overall, and oh my bust, did not do well.
Yeah. So Quinn Priester, love Quinn Priester. Second favorite move I think is going to be Lucas Sims. They needed to add to the bullpen, and that's a guy who's been a legitimate late inning arm for years, and I trust him. Third favorite, I'm surprised that I'm saying this because I didn't really understand it at the time, but it's Danny Jansen. I believe in the swing. I think they need a right-handed bat. I wish they added another, but I think filling that hole is really important. And then I'm going to kind of walk the tightrope here and tie James Paxton and Luis Garcia for fourth and fifth because I feel like James Paxton filled a huge need, but I like Luis Garcia better as a player. I like the deal itself for Paxton more because they gave up next to nothing, whereas Luis Garcia, they gave up a lot, albeit guys that they were going to lose in the Rule 5. But I think it's fair to say that we all really like the Quinn Priester move. I think that was kind of Breslow's cooking move of the deadline. And the bullpen guys they added, I think, give us some ease. But Red Sox lost to the Mariners in the second game of the series. And by God, they are 3-8 since the deadline. So woo! We'll be back in your ears tomorrow to recap that series, to talk through the great game one and the bad game two and the hopefully great game three. But before you leave,
win. We got the script. The Red Sox win on
Red Sox win
on Wednesday. Yep.
But before you get on with your day, remember hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening. Rate us 5 stars wherever you're listening. If you're watching on YouTube, go to your favorite podcast platform and hit the subscribe button, and then go to your second favorite podcast platform and hit subscribe. But also rate us 5 stars and hit the thumbs up on YouTube. We're on WEI's page. We've got a Play Tessie playlist. Also find us on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter and Instagram. Whew! Deadline day is always a whirl, man. Nothing transformative, nothing huge. At the bare minimum, even if you're unhappy with it, they did make an honest effort to plug each of the holes they had. And we'll see where it goes. We'll see if this team makes the playoffs. By God, I want to see them in the playoffs. So it's going to be a big final 2 months of the season. And I'm glad they're in it because I know, God, just thinking about what we thought preseason, it is a miracle that they're at this point. But we'll be back tomorrow after the Mariners series and preview the next one. I don't even know who they're playing next, but we'll figure all that out before tomorrow. But we appreciate you guys tuning in for our trade deadline special to recap the deadline. This is Play Tessie episode 105. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
Escape the heat to True North Convenience Stores and get any size True Oasis Fountain Drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi Fountain Drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Bitcoin might sound complicated, but the Gemini credit card makes it so simple. Use it like any credit card. Buy lunch, gas, or your weekly groceries, and you'll earn up to 4% back instantly in Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos straight to your account. No annual fee. And right now, you can grab a $200 Bitcoin intro bonus. It's the easiest way to start building your Bitcoin stash. Go to Gemini.com/card to learn more. Terms apply. Issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must be approved by June 30th, 2025 and spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other Gemini credit card terms, see rates and fees.